Tonight in Arkansas, there's a mother tucking in her daughter and turning off the light. A business owner is burning the midnight oil. An at-home dinner date is plating up possibility. And it's all happening under one roof. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one John from Integrity Solutions had with First Horizon Bank about his vision for a sustainable mixed-use building. Now it's not just words, it's life. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/John. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
One SEC program swears has its quarterback. Problem is, we got to see it from them. Chuck Oliver Show on a Tuesday. Hope everybody's having a wonderful experience today. We talk college football. It is what we do for 2 hours. Been doing it for the past 10 years. So thank y'all for coming here. When I say an SEC program, man, they will swear. We got this figured out. This one we really, really like. I'm talking about South Carolina, and I am talking about the very unforced, very natural, very eager, not anxious. That's different. A lot of people interchange those words. Not anxious. Eager look ahead to the season based around Lenoris Sellers becoming the starting quarterback and taking over that position and the program. If you don't know Lenoris Sellers, he was a freshman last year. Now, his driver's license says he's 18. He's a whole lot of quarterback. He's 6'3", 245 is what he's listed at, and I believe it. And it was sort of a slow build to the offers rolling in, but then Virginia Tech and Virginia, and he's a kid from South Carolina, I think. Florence, maybe? And they started rolling in. Georgia Tech got involved, and then just South Carolina true loved him, and he committed, and he was an early enrollee last year, and boom, he's off and running because I'm going to be Spencer Rattler's backup for one season, and then I'm going to be the starter. Now, there are a lot of kids and programs, head coaches, who think that. And then life happens, and you realize either he's got to start now, or he's never going to be a ball player because we got to see him up close, or he leaves, or whatever can undo this. Nothing has undone this. And I don't just mean, well, Lenoris hung around. I mean, by everyone's account, and Spence Rattler, wow. You talk about a program that had never sniffed that air. Now, they didn't get him out of high school, but sniffed that air as far as a quarterback goes. Steve Spurrier went down to Tampa and got Stephen Garcia. And as I remember, he was a highfalutin four-star quarterback who had a lot of offers. And he went there, and he had a couple of games where, man, you're like, all right, I see that. And then he had a Peach Bowl where, like, he and none of the other quarterbacks could play the next day. I don't know what happened, but whatever. So, but he was the big name. Otherwise, it had been, we are stitching things together, sometimes just a season at a time. And if we go back about a decade, when I say that South Carolina right now, it was Shane Beamer, other folks around the program, receivers who work with him. Everybody's like, no, Lenoris is legit. If you go back about a decade and you look at just the impossible resume that South Carolina has put together as far as bringing players into the program who then play quarterback to some degree and then where they wind up, over the course of about two seasons, maybe 2014-15, if you look at kids on scholarship who wound up either starting quarterback or practicing quarterback or some sort, they were on the depth chart, they were QB. After leaving Columbia, one was a starting quarterback at South Alabama via Utah. One was sitting the bench as a quarterback at James Madison. One was playing wide receiver at Southeast Louisiana. Another was playing wide receiver for the Los Angeles Rams. Folks, one was playing center field for the New York Mets single A team. Now, against the backdrop of all of these guys coming into the program and then leaving by some means, there still was one playing quarterback at South Carolina. A guy named Perry Orth, who, if you look on the roster, he would be listed as, I don't know, probably about 6 feet tall or so, and he just was not a very, he was not a physically overwhelming guy. He just wasn't. I personally don't think there were ever any plans for Perry Orth to play quarterback. I think what happened is they looked around and at various times realized, all right, we can either play the wide receiver, who's the best player on the team, or we can at least like try something, or we can play a true freshman who is a short dog in tall weeds, or we can play Perry Orth. We can play the guy who, yeah, we're watching him play QB. Looks like a pretty good baseball player. Or like we can play, like Perry Orth just kept coming to practice. And so when I say like he was the, folks, I'm talking conference games, like important things, like, all right, well, Perry, go get you some. I can't imagine that Steve Spurrier ever had any intentions of that being how it unfolded after Connor Shaw, who's about the most responsible and, all right, I know we're going this way, quarterback you could ever have, and the guy made plays. And then Dylan Thompson, who kind of is the forgotten guy. He's the quarterback that time forgot. He's the that 1 year. He had a night against Auburn, man. Steve Spurrier may have coached his best game I ever saw Steve Spurrier coach against Auburn. Against anybody that night against Auburn. He had probably five impossible calls, and I was like, well, that one worked too. Still lost the game, but Dylan Thompson had some real moment. Might have even caught a pass that night. But it was supposed to go Connor Shaw, Dylan Thompson, someone else we all know and watched and went, oh, okay, well, this guy can do it. It wasn't supposed to be someone who had Steve Spurrier going, maybe I'll quit. So that's what we started hearing from this program was, oh, we've got the guy. Really? Because he's actually playing double-A baseball now. We've got the guy. Do you? Because now he's at Arkansas State. We've got the guy. Do you? Because he decommitted and went to Florida. Like, we've got the guy. I've heard it and heard it and heard it. And I've even seen it. I saw Helinski play, and I was like, I think I like this. And then the more I watched, he kind of looked heavy footed and then it never seems to turn out as good as it sort of looks like it might. Farrow Cooper turned out. Problem is, if he was playing quarterback, he wasn't playing wide receiver. So it's been a really odd resume they put together. Then they went and got the former number one recruit in America. And that kid played his tail off the past 2 years. Now, didn't always show up in the, like, most obvious, like, I didn't watch the game, but I'm looking at the numbers. Bad Tupperware. No, it didn't always show up that way. That kid played his tail off. And I mentioned this maybe last week. We were talking about how, quote, tough he is. That doesn't necessarily increase your stock with the NFL, but it does make it so you can wind up doing color on the radio broadcast. I don't know. They've had the same guy for a while. I don't know if he's still there. But at some point, they're going to have a color analyst. And so that's the guy who you bring back forever and ever after his NFL career. There are just certain people on the short list. And if you're a quarterback who takes the hits, then you wind up being one of those guys. Now, when we were talking about Nico a few weeks ago, I'd gone back and I just like top of mind. And I would invite you to do this, and I want to make a distinction. Rank the quarterbacks in the SEC, all right, 1 through 16. But don't start, all right, who do I think is the best? Write down the first SEC quarterback that comes to just the last name of the first kid that comes to Milroe. All right. The next quarterback that comes to mind, Nussmeier. Does he go above Milroe or he goes below Nussmeier? The next one, Beck. All right, well, he goes above. Put your 16 together like that. It is a slightly nuanced way to do it. But I'm telling you, you wind up getting a much clearer idea of how you really think of somebody versus, all right, well, who's the second best quarterback? I did it that way to come up with my most recent 16. And Lenora Sellers, see, there's one thing missing that I'm give me a chance here, because he played a little bit last year. I think he might have played in 4 games. He played some last year, but he played in 3 games. The one thing that's missing is what we got from Nico, the bowl. If you go back, and I'd forgotten, I was like, well, I know Spence Rattler, and he's in the draft, and so clearly didn't play in the bowl. So just like I did with Nico, I'm going to go back and watch the bowl again. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. That's what happened. With Lenora Sellers, I was like, oh, yeah, weren't no bowl. So we really are flying blind. He threw 4 passes against Furman. And that's kind of it. Isn't there supposed to be a bowl game in Jacksonville or Shreveport? Isn't there supposed to be a bowl game where Lenora Sellers, like, he was 18 of 35, but you saw stuff and you actually feel better about it? And, like, aren't you? Or maybe it's Nico, where you look at Nico and go, okay, this is going to work. Like, there's supposed to be the bowl game there. And so if you're looking at Lenora Sellers, so when I say their resume is just too spotty, if Josh Heupel looks us in the eye and says, folks, I'm telling you, Nico's going to be the best quarterback I've ever coached, I'm looking back at him and going, well, all right, I'm going to watch it unfold, but I can see that it might. Lenora Sellers, we're taking it on spec. Hey, trust us, guys. We've been at practice every day. We love this kid. There was supposed to be a bowl, and there wasn't. And so whenever we hear, you know, coaches, oh, get the 15 practices, depending on when the bowl game is, you may not even get the 15 practices. You may not. You may get like 11 or 12 or something. But I don't care if you're going to Shreveport on December 26th, okay? I don't care if you're going over to Birmingham and you're eating the coldest Papa John's pizza in the history of cold pizza. I needed 35 pass attempts and 60 minutes of football against a Division I opponent that was good enough to win 6 games. Problem was, South Carolina was not. So we're missing out on that, and we have to take it all on spec. So, like I said, it has been a weird, nearly impossible resume for that program to put together, where their quarterbacks throw them up and the win just whoosh, other sports, other leagues, whatever. But this one, man, it is a very, I mean, like a very quiet, paced confidence from folks around Columbia, what they think about Lenora Sellers. So, all right, we will find out how that progresses. We're going to take a break, jump into it next.
Catch the King of College Football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Chuck Oliver Show rolling along on this Tuesday. And I find out things all the time related to college football. Like, I've been just staring at college football. I remember the first college football game that I went to, I was just shy of my 3rd birthday, Auburn at Clemson in Death Valley. I think Auburn won 44-0. So I've been watching college football since then. I still learn stuff. The day I learned that Floyd was a pig, I was like, that's Floyd of Rosedale? I've learned what zone 6 is when it comes to Ohio State wide receivers. Apparently zone 6, they've got their own Twitter account. Wide receiver U, works for me. I mean, LSU, mad props. Florida, until, I don't know, about 10 years ago, boom, what did you do? Sure, Florida, absolutely Florida. And I don't care what happened in the NFL with Chad Jackson or whomever else. We're talking wide receiver U, it's Ohio State, folks. You know why? Because they're like they're an NFL. They're not even the 33rd franchise. Like, that's Georgia. I'm not even saying that about their wide receivers. I'm saying their wide receivers most years, they are good enough to be at least part of a NFL wide receiver core. That tight end, Stover, the other kid, who was it, Rucker a few years ago? We know all about the wide receivers, but there's a new one. His name is Jermaine Smith, and he's this big, giant kid from Florida. Chaminade Madonna Prep. He's 18 years old, just turned 18, I guess. He's 18 now. 6'3", 215 pounds, and he's an early enrollee, and he just got welcomed into Zone 6. I don't know what that meant. Or I didn't know, but now it's their wide receiver group. And apparently you got a black stripe on your helmet, and when you make a play, you get to, all right, now you're actually on the team. Well, it took Jeremiah Smith about 4 days, and they're like, yeah, he may be one of the better players on the team. So the point to all this is when you look at this kid who should be getting ready for the SAT to go to prom, et cetera, except Jeremiah Smith is not still in high school. He's on campus at CBUS, and he's making plays against Ohio State secondary. If you're looking around and you're a returning receiver, this is the toughest news possible. At Ohio State, if you're a receiver, it will never be about it's your turn. Jeremiah Smith doesn't know anything about who's been there for how long or what they did in practice while he wasn't starting, and he worked really hard, and so he just got up the depth chart, and, you know, I better look at Ibuka, and, well, he's older, and so I can't take – yeah, you can. Jeremiah Smith already has taken somebody's job. It's just up to, like, the other five guys to decide if it's your job or not. That kid looks fantastic, and so he is – the reason I bring this up is because they sent out a video. Like, yep, he already did these two things. He's got the black stripe off, and then he also is in the wide receiver. Like, he's really in the group now, and you only get there by making plays. And so this is the next guy, and they already know it, and he's not even – he hasn't even earned a class credit yet. He's been going to class, but I guess they haven't got their they haven't got their grades back yet. So when he gets the grades back, it's kind of like, you know, you're not in the Players Association until you get into the bottom of the fifth inning, I believe. It's the same thing here. It's he's in the group now. So good for him, and just a monster up there is what it looks like. That's what everybody's expecting to. Hey, how's a Tuesday?
Well, it's an interesting Tuesday, Chuck, because you were talking some Ohio State. If you want to get that first look at the guy, one place that you will be able to do that is something that Fox is doing. They announced yesterday they're going to have Ohio State's spring game broadcast nationally on Fox. Not on FX, not on Fox Sports 1 or 2 or some web stream. This will be the first time someone has taken a spring game and gone national with it. ESPN's done it, but this is over the air national for coverage of a spring game. Ohio State on the 13th, and then April 20th, it's going to be Michigan. So both of those kind of signature Big Ten programs getting the national spring game treatment from Fox. And apparently they're not just going to have a crew do the game. They're going to have the whole, you know, pregame show, the whole bit. Look, credit Fox, I guess, for being willing to take a chance here. I don't know how many people there are that justify a national audience for a spring football game on the over-the-air network, but I don't know what else Fox has got going that day, so maybe it's the best they've got. If they don't have baseball, just say, hey, let's take a stab at it and see what happens. But
cheap programming and recoup some of your rights fees. It's. I'm telling you, it's the same thing we talked about with the playoff committee meetings. It's cheap programming, so let's do more of it.
But I will say I'm interested in seeing this kid, Chuck, because everybody said in recruiting, this dude is special. This is somebody who's ready to go up and immediately wreck shop. And as you say, the standard that has been set for Ohio State wide receivers is really high. And also, I mean, look, I assume we're going to get some idea what it is that they are doing with that offense. I don't think they're going to show everything, but I'm curious to see, does it look more like Chip Kelly running Ryan Day's offense? Does it look more like what Chip Kelly was doing at UCLA that was a lot run heavier than maybe people associated with him earlier in his career? Do we even get some idea what's going on there? So I'm not going to say, hey, man, I'm going to be glued to the two, but I'll DVR that and take a look? Yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah, I'm thinking about the two deep still. Can you imagine being the upperclassman and you waited for Marvin Harrison to leave and then this guy shows up and like the first half hour of practice, you're like, all right, well, I'm behind him.
It's a heck of a commentary to where they are. And the fact that Brian Hartline's still there, too.
Oh, no doubt. And that's a huge impact thing for them. You get the feeling sooner or later somebody's going to try and make that hire, the kind of hire. Remember when Memphis went and got Larry Porter? Just that idea.
Let's get the running backs coach who signs everybody.
Let's just go get the ace recruiter and see if he can hire some coaches that are any good. Sooner or later, somebody's got to do that with Hartline, right? The only question is, Hartline's never had to recruit anywhere that's not Ohio State, and obviously he's an elite recruiter at Ohio State. I don't know if he's that same level of recruiter if you put him at, I don't know, pick a random ACC mid-tier school. I don't know if he's that level of guy or not, but sooner or later somebody's going to have to try that, I would think.
You would imagine, and he probably could have already had a job. I would imagine he's at least hoping for a shot at the job. Before we go to break here, Heath, any additional color commentary on my South Carolina? Because you had so much experience with those guys. It just was a strange, like, two-season period with how so many guys that were, quote, the quarterback, and then what they did next.
Yeah, it was uncanny. They had a whole bunch of four-stars in there that never really worked out. And the guys you mentioned that were the most successful, Garcia obviously had his moments. He was a four-star and probably considered the most touted player that had enrolled at the quarterback position in the school at the time that they landed him. But you look at it, Connor Shaw was a three-star, a little undersized, was someone G.A. Mangus brought to that program that he was in on, but that was not necessarily someone that without Mangus being hired they would have landed on, and obviously Shaw became a standard setter for the program. Dylan Thompson was a classic example of a guy who was perceived as sort of he's an in-state guy, okay arm, he probably won't transfer, he'll be around but probably never be the guy, and instead had a great year the year that he was the QB. And then between Connor Mitch not working out, just not fitting the college lifestyle, maybe a little too proud of what he did in high school and not adjusting, a guy like Nunez having to play too early, who was an athlete but wasn't ready to play but had to because of Mitch's failure. It all kind of caved in on itself. And McElwain, even when he went out to Cal, it just never worked. Somehow none of those guys ever developed except for Bentley, and Bentley kind of topped off after his sophomore year. He just kind of never seemed to find that next gear. So, yeah, it was an unbelievable dry run. You'd think sooner or later they'll hit it. I will tell you this, Chuck, haven't seen Sellers. He has every resource you need. We'll see whether or not the rest of it's there.
Yeah, and it's not a sell job, folks. There's nothing fake about this. It's legit. Like, no, we've got our guy and we're confident in him.
Now, a lifetime of hard work. Children laughing in the kitchen. Family photos on a restaurant wall. A legacy that lives on. It all comes from the power of a conversation. Like the one Tommy Hall had with First Horizon Bank about taking over his father's Charleston-based restaurant business. Now the table is set for a whole new generation. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Tommy. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Marketing is everywhere. From the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone, we are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
More college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
All week, all year, talk college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. 9 states and 66, folks, been doing it for 10 years. I do appreciate the blessing. We're going to talk a little Sunshine State football. The Florida Gator variety, want to welcome on right now from a truly heritage station yonder in Jacksonville, 1010 XL, Ryan Hacker Green. Welcome back, friend. How you been?
Chuck, I'm good, buddy. How are you?
Oh, nothing but good. So Billy Napier, they've been through 5 or 6 practices. Am I right on that math? Where do they stand right now as far as, hey, we got to look at DJ Lagway wearing a Florida uniform and run around against college kids?
Yeah, that's pretty much where we're at. It's all DJ Lagway all the time. Every video that you see, every soundbite that you hear focuses at least a little bit on DJ Lagway. Of course, the 5-star quarterback from the state of Texas. Although Graham Mertz is obviously still here, back for year number 2. And what was, Chuck, honestly, a very surprising campaign. from Mertz last year. I know a lot of Gator fans were very lukewarm on him coming in, but I thought Mertz played pretty decently for the most part in 2023. And so the idea is that Mertz will be the guy this year. Certainly they'll work Lagway in, you would expect, but make no mistake about it, this is Graham Mertz's football team moving forward here in 2024.
So who's he throwing to? Because there are snaps available.
There are. They got to replace Ricky Pearsall, which is going to be easier said than done. Obviously, Eugene Wilson came on really big last year. He's going to be kind of the guy. And then they got other guys. They got Andy Jean, who was a freshman last year that did a couple of nice things. Aiden Mizell is a guy that they want to get involved. There's a couple of transfers in, but there's no doubt replacing Ricky Pearsall is going to be an issue. And Florida's got a lot of young guys that they're hoping can make an impact this upcoming season.
Mentioned Trey Wilson. I talked to Napier at Media Days last year, and I'd ask him, I was like, all right, freshman, talk about him. He mentioned Gene and Mizell. They were both freshmen last year, right? I think he mentioned Gene and Mizell. What is the thought of them after a year and staying in the program, and now they have, you know, the coaches have a better idea about what their capabilities are?
Well, they're hoping they take a step forward, certainly. I mean, you know, Wilson was the guy that took a step forward, which was interesting, Chuck, because a lot of people – we're talking about Gene. We're talking about Mizell coming into the year and maybe not necessarily talking about Wilson. He was certainly the surprise, and he's gone from the surprise to the number one wide receiver in a very short amount of time. So a lot of focus will be on him. They obviously want the young guys to develop, as we said, a couple of transfers. But it's not only replacing Ricky Pearsall, it's replacing Trevor Etienne in the backfield as well. Montrell Johnson still in the fold. They hope Treyon Webb, a young man right out of Jacksonville, can do something as well. But arguably, their two best playmakers, Etienne and Pearsall, have to be replaced, and Florida's going through spring practice trying to figure out how to do that.
You mentioned Webb there. He's a guy that, I mean, he just got a teacup action. He got some moments last year. Big, thick kid, though, and I always look for a freshman running back. I'm like, do you have an SEC body? I mean, a lot of guys can run, but can you take that hit? What's the idea for Webb this year?
Yeah, I like Webb. I like him a lot. I covered him in high school, did a lot of things with him when he was at Trinity Christian in the Jacksonville area. And he's a guy that committed, I think he was committed to Georgia at one point. There was a cup of coffee with, I want to say, Texas at one point. I mean, he had big schools looking at him dating all the way back to his freshman and sophomore years in high school. So really well thought of kid, highly recruited. Like you said, a cup of coffee last year, but he showed in a very short amount of time that it looked like he belongs. And now with Etienne gone, Montrell Johnson should get the workload, but certainly Webb is going to be the guy that they're hoping can replace Etienne as the second part of that running back combo.
Do you see the DNA of either the new coaches or the new coaching assignments on offense? Can you see any real difference, or is it kind of like a Florida practice under Billy Napier?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little early right now. Obviously, like you said, they're only at like practice six or seven for the spring. I think that'll develop. I mean, I'm curious to see how Austin Armstrong does in year two in the system as the defensive coordinator. They brought in Roberts from Auburn to kind of help him. They brought in some help on special teams, so maybe they don't throw out two number threes on special teams and get a 15-yard unsportsmanlike penalty.
That did happen, yes.
Oh, it was unbelievable. That was incredible that happened. So a lot of that stuff hopefully has been cleaned up, and for Napier's sake, it better be cleaned up. But you can't really see too much of it yet. Obviously, that'll come as we get further along.
You know, I want to ask you, I guess I was going to get to this at the end, but you mentioned it was the Utah game, and I was just honestly shocked because all I had heard, now this was not other people, from Billy Napier was, I am more detailed, I am more hands-on, I am more minute, I am like all these things, and I also have 107 support personnel. and then against Utah, none of that was true against Utah. Has he refined processes? Is he really happy with this version of the coaching staff now?
I think so. I mean, he had to do something, right? So he did bring in some pieces to help him. I think he had too much on his plate. Billy Napier, here's the thing. I really like Billy. I like what he's doing in recruiting. I like the staff he's assembled. He says all the right things at all the Gator gatherings around the state. From that standpoint, I think he's been fine. But unfortunately, he's 11 and 14 in 2 years at Florida. And you know as well as I do, Chuck, that's not going to work for Gator fans, Gator boosters, et cetera. So not only is there a little bit of a hot seat coming into the year, but I've followed Gator football dating back to 1990. I'm 40 years old. My furthest memory is probably Spurrier's first year back in 90. So in 34 some odd years of watching Gator football, I can never remember on paper a schedule that was this daunting. Now, some schedules look a lot harder in March than they turned out to be in September. But for the here and now, it is the hardest schedule I've ever seen for the University of Florida. So it's the perfect storm. You got a coach on the hot seat that needs to win, playing the toughest schedule in college football, which is certainly not a good recipe.
Wrapping up again, we're talking a little Florida Gators. Ryan Hacker Green, 1010 XL, big giant station down yonder in Jacksonville. All right, defense, and this may be, don't violate HIPAA or anything. Shamar continues to come back fine from the injury, right? He's on track?
Yeah, as far as I know, he is. They've had a couple of setbacks in practice, but I don't think anything that's going to cost them in summer drills or certainly fall conditioning. And the defensive side of the ball, they need to emerge. I mean, that was a problem, a big problem, towards the end of the year. And I go back to Austin Armstrong. You hope the 31-year-old, or I guess he will be 31 during the year, you hope he figured out some stuff last year because they had some issues on defense. That LSU game was an embarrassment. I mean, I get Jaden Daniels is great, and I get Brian Thomas and Malik Nabers. They had a great team. But it was flat-out embarrassing, the product Florida put out there on defense last year. And you got to clean a lot of that up. They're going to have no chance to do much of anything this year unless that defense improves in a very big way.
All right. Well, talk about the absolute very back end, because I think I'd seen, are there three freshmen coming back from last year? Like, I'm now impressed by like a position group that has multiple freshmen coming back, like the wide receivers. This is what college football has done to me. Will they tackle better? Because, I mean, I'm just aghast. Like I said, I'm not even a Florida fan or a Florida grad, and I'm watching this going, this hurts me watching how bad they tackle back there sometimes.
Yeah, it was awful. Castile's the main guy. He was the freshman last year that got the most playing time, and they really like him. But, yeah, I mean, you know, fundamentals, right? I mean, you know, Brian Thomas catches a ball against Florida for LSU. Should be a 10-yard slant. Turns out to be a 50-yard gain. It's amazing how that happens when you don't just simply get the guy on the ground when you have the opportunity. So, like I said, a lot of young guys are going to have to emerge. They've got some players. Don't get me wrong. They like the guys that they have. These guys need to grow up awfully quick because you dive into the year right out of the gate with Miami, Texas A&M, Tennessee, Kentucky, and that's all even before you come to Jacksonville for the cocktail party. So these young guys are going to need to grow up in a very big way in a very big hurry.
All right, just your feel, and you've talked about the decades you've, you know, been paying attention to the Gators as, you know, either fan or media or whatever. I can't imagine the stakes of that Miami game in the opener. I can't imagine that Florida has had a home game in recent memory where there is just, I mean, so much, like, clenched fist tension about the outcome of that game.
I mean, gigantic for both, right? It's gigantic yep. for Cristobal and Coral Gables, gigantic for Napier and Gainesville. I mean, it's at the Swamp. It's in Gainesville, so maybe a little bit more pressure on the Gators. But that is going to be, you want to talk about nerve-wracking excitement for both fan bases. They don't like each other. They don't normally play each other. And both teams need to win, and both coaches need to win. So you talk about starting off a season with a bang. There's going to be a lot more, what I would say, interesting games nationally, perhaps. But you want to talk about the most important game for two schools on opening weekend. I don't know if there's a much more important game, Chuck, in the country than Miami and Florida on August 31st because of what the ramifications will be for the team and the head coach that lose that game.
All right, last thing, and I've just been kind of polling folks, getting their various responses, and I seem to be getting one. There are times where a coach can post some outcomes that it's not the victories, but you see its progress and you really are getting better. And I've been told, no, there's nothing short of just bottom line raw dubs, wins, victories. That's there is nothing about indicators and making progress in 2024. You win or you're done. Is that a fair assessment in your judgment?
I think, you know, look, is there a magic number that Billy Napier needs to hit? I don't know. I mean, you didn't go to a bowl game last year. You went to a bowl game the first year. You didn't even show up for the bowl game. If they don't go to a bowl game again, I mean, there are going to be problems. But, Chuck, I would question anybody, at least right now, as we sit in late March, find me six wins on that Gator schedule. look at those 12 games and pick six out and said, yeah, they're absolutely going to win that game. It doesn't exist. I mean, I think maybe one or two you could say, yeah, they'll probably win. They'll probably beat Samford, right? UCF here, you would think they would win that game, but all of a sudden KJ Jefferson shows up there. I mean, Miami, A&M, Tennessee, Kentucky, Georgia, Texas, Ole Miss. It's crazy. LSU, Florida State, they're going to be the underdog. Florida will be in 9 of those games, maybe 10 of those games. So I think they need to go to a bowl game for Napier to be safe. And even at that point, at 6-6, I'm not exactly sure. But if they don't go to a bowl game, look, I mean, Gator boosters, fans, they're going to be angry. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, and home against Miami and A&M and then in Starkville, like none of that screams easy for this squad. You mentioned the UCF game. I think that's a landmine. I mean, we see this all across college football. It's a rough September and some kids go, okay, that's 4 games, I'm out. It's just the reality that we live in college football right now. So, I mean, it gets tough and it stays that way the entire time. You're exactly right. Ryan, I appreciate your time, friend.
Hey, Chuck, anytime, brother. Take care.
Yes, sir. Ryan Green, 1010XL. That's again, not predicting doom. That's just what we've seen. I played 4 games. All right, I'm done. For this season at this school, I'm done. We saw that last year with the NC State quarterback who wasn't even supposed to be the quarterback. He was supposed to be the guy who transferred to be with the new OC. All right, well, he's not playing well, and he's beat up, so you go. By the way, we don't have a leading rusher. The leading rusher was the quarterback and then a wide receiver, so you go play quarterback. You play quarterback for 4 games, and he's like, okay, yeah, I'm going to transfer. A lot of times, that's somebody who has done the opposite, who hasn't played nearly enough. So he mentioned UCF. That's 4 games to start the season. 3, you get Miami, Samford, A&M at home, then go Starkville. Got a bye week next week, so you may even be able to sit around and stew about it. Then you've got UCF. So it's he's staring right down the barrel. And you can win your way out of this. You can. But it is beyond the point of, look, I know that we won 4 games or 5 games, but that don't play in Gainesville. We've talked about it, folks. Back in the day, Jim McElwain, he was mouth agape. Wait a minute, I won consecutive East Division titles. Like, we're Florida. Really? We're Florida. You think we care about that? Like, Gary Pinkel might have got a statue in Como. Jim McElwain got fired. So there are standard. There were. And again, I don't say that. Like, Tennessee, there was times I was like, there's standards here. And I was like, no, wait a minute. It's been a couple of decades. Maybe there were standards there. It's just a really, really tough spot for everybody around that program. All right, we're going to break, come back, and wrap up Hour 1 next.
Now back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
Connor comes in the spring as our number one, and I think everyone's aware of that, but you know, like everything, you want competition and you want competition within your program. And so, you know, Connor's out there now. He's back. He's taking the majority of the reps. He's not, 100% back off that injury, but he's enough to go out there and do the things that he's got to do to start learning this offense and progressing how he wants to progress.
Mike Elko, Texas A&M head coach. He was Duke head coach after being D.C. at Texas A&M and Notre Dame and places like that. And he has only experienced success. But I had said the same thing about Jimbo Fisher before he shows up at College Station. Said the same thing about Kevin Sumlin. Said the same thing about a lot of folks. And lately that program has been above average to good. But they have rarely peaked that. And I even look with a cocked eyebrow now. And I did this, by the way, a couple years ago. Their trend emerged. Not even a trend. It was like this subset. I looked at the COVID season of 2020 with a cocked eyebrow. Now, I'm not saying it invalidates what you did because that was the Mac Jones Alabama year, right? Yeah, folks, they figured out there was a way to get it done. They figured it out. So it means it was possible. But I also look at there was a certain group of coaches that found a way, again, cracked whatever that code was, maybe having the most eligible kids on a Saturday. Having more kids on Saturday was really attainable. Now it's mostly injuries or a disgruntled kid. You could have 35 fewer kids from one Saturday to the next in 2020. But there was just a subset of coaches who found a way to have a pop season in 2020 against a backdrop of not getting it done before or after. And the result was Tom Allen got broke off from Indiana. And Jimbo got broke off from Texas A&M. And a bunch of coaches who had one season in 2020, oh, we got to break them off now. When you go back and look at their resume before and after, had a pop season. Like I said, I think that I know that a large part of it has to be they had more available players than other programs. And so, I don't know, maybe the virus just missed their campus. But Mike Elko, head coach of Texas A&M now, in part because Jimbo went 8-1 that year and finished like top five, and brother was at the peak. And they climbed Everest to get up there following Sumlin, and then right after, and but Connor Wegman is back. Are we aware? I'd mentioned them in terms of they play in Gainesville week three. Boy, that'll be fun. And you talk about stakes. Go back a couple of weeks before that. Texas A&M and Notre Dame. Gimme, gimme, gimme. I think it is the final season of that thing in Jerry World. I think it's the final season. Either this year or next. I think it's the final year. So you can go look at their schedule, and it even finishes with a home game against Texas. So all of this is fantastic. Home game against New Mexico State, tickets are $43. Home game against Texas, $519. And by the way, that's a get-in price. Get-in price, $519. So he's got spring practice going, and Connor Wegman, when he's played pretty well. They've got two other kids, Marcel Reed. Jalen Henderson is the transfer from Fresno State, who I know I looked at. A lot of people did. Why is he transfer? They've already got three quarterbacks. Well, then they didn't have any quarterbacks, and Jalen Henderson was starting. And so he's still there. And it's Connor's position, but as Mike Elko said, he's been limited coming back from injury. He's there, and he's going through, but he's been limited as he comes back. And Jalen Henderson's like, yeah, I still want to compete. So that's what's going on at Texas A&M. What up, Heath?
A couple of things here, Chuck. One on-field injury note, Michigan has lost somebody that's a pretty big deal for them. Rod Moore, starting safety for them for each of the last 3 years, all Big Ten last year, torn ACL yesterday during practice for Michigan. When you look at the number of players that they're losing, anybody with that kind of experience would be a big deal. Yeah, it's a new defensive coordinator, so you could argue, well, you know, maybe there's some differences. But again, the thought is that Martindale is going to largely be running something similar. So that experience, even though it's a new coordinator, would have probably had a lot of value. And for Michigan, given all that they've lost, losing a guy who's expected to be an on-field leader as well as just a big-time player, pretty significant injury out of spring. We haven't heard many of those kind of injuries for whatever reason, Chuck. It doesn't seem like, at least, that many teams to this point have lost key guys in spring that we've heard about. But that's one to kind of file away that's a big deal for them. Also, with regards to what's going to happen with NIL, with recruiting and everything else, there's a lot of people, obviously, that are kind of looking at stuff and just saying, is there any way, for example, when the Trojans say we're gonna build a defense one way or the other, and if that means we got to go in the South and make some really good offers, that's what we're going to do. Is there anything that can defeat that? And the answer, curiously enough, comes from the NFL. Did you by any wild chance see what Robert Kraft had to say about why the Patriots were not able to sign wide receiver Calvin Ridley in free agency?
Why was that?
He told reporters this morning, quote, "There was one outstanding receiver that unfortunately we couldn't close. It was not because of finance. It was made clear his girlfriend wanted to be in the South. And we offered and were willing to keep going to that premium," talking about the tax difference between Massachusetts and Tennessee. "We were willing to keep going that premium, but he didn't want to be in the Northeast." So, in the end, you know as well as I do, Chuck, there are plenty of times through the years that schools have done things, whether that's offer the girlfriend an academic scholarship, whether that's offer the girlfriend, hey, would you like to play softball? You might not have played softball before. Would you like to learn? There's been plenty of those kind of examples through the years of trying to get a player through the use of the girlfriend, maybe more now than ever. If you're a school that's not sure whether or not you can win a battle with somebody who's got the big bag, maybe making sure you take care of the home front might be the answer for some of these programs. It's at minimum something they're going to have to think about, because if you're talking about the kind of money that a guy like Calvin Ridley was going to make, he's going to be enormously rich either way, but he decided, place with kind of an unsure quarterback situation, place versus another place with an unsure quarterback situation. I'll go with the one that makes the girlfriend happy. It's just something, if you're college, you might want to think about more than ever.
Yeah, I've always been amazed when you see places like Ann Arbor, for instance, and CBUS, and you know, even Penn State. It's not just you can get guys, because there are folks who grow up in the local area who always just, I'm going to the State U no matter what. It's when you go down into Florida and Texas and Georgia and you convince kids to go spend 3 or 4 years up there. That's what's always impressed me the most.
Marketing is everywhere, from the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone. We are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions, and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
This morning in the Atlanta airport, no one's missing a meal on Mac Wilburn's watch. With 11 restaurants to serve passengers, he's got dining for every destination. And it all started when Mac talked with First Horizon Bank about opening a franchise in the airport. Now it's open for business and cleared for takeoff. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Mac. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Is there chaos in your closet?
Look, Blouse, you've got some nerve hanging there like that.
I can't help it. I'm jammed in here next to this suit.
Hey, I'm a three-piece, all right? Which means I need a little more room.
You've got a lot of attitude for a linen suit.
I'm a polyester blend, sweetheart. There needs to be room for men's clothes, too.
Hi, I'm Christina, and at Artisan Custom Closets, we help families organize and simplify their closets with customized storage solutions. See what's possible for your home at artisancustomclosets.com, and then call us for a free in-home consultation.